Our next speaker, ladies and gentlemen, is Edgar Steele, attorney at law. He's from Sagely, Idaho. Is that the proper pronunciation? Sagely, Idaho. Edgar Steele is a trial lawyer who tries cases throughout the West Coast, being admitted to California, Oregon, Washington, Idaho, several federal district and special courts, and the U.S. Supreme Court. He graduated from the University of Washington with a B.A. in 1967, then served 4 years in the U.S. Coast Guard, first aboard ships, then as the commanding officer of an East China Sea island, Loran Station, during the Vietnam era. Edgar graduated from the University of California at Berkeley with an MBA in 1973, then worked for several years in a succession of financial executive positions for corporations, including the controllership of two companies. He graduated from the UCLA School of Law in 1982, worked for a couple of years for a small law firm in the San Francisco Bay Area, then struck off on his own. Today, his law practice includes several cases noted for testing the limits of constitutional law on behalf of politically incorrect clients. Yay! For this reason, Edgar occasionally has been referred to as the attorney for the damned. That's us, I guess, huh? Edgar publishes a weekly commentary via the Internet, interspersing observations on the state of American society and politics, with reports about aspects of the higher-profile cases he is handling. Free subscriptions are available at www.conspiracypenpal.com. Edgar makes his home in northern Idaho with his wife of 18 years and their three children on a working horse ranch. Please welcome Ed Steele. Ed Cole Steele.
Thank you very much.
Lawyers.
You know, maybe not all of you have heard this joke yet. You know, it's 99% of the lawyers that give the rest of us a bad name. You notice I didn't laugh. You know, that would be funny if it weren't true. And it really is. You know, you may feel bad about lawyers, but trust me, you don't feel anything like I do. I'm going to have trouble walking around with this, aren't I? I'll make it come off. I have trouble standing in one place, ladies and gentlemen. Ever since I was a little kid, my mother yelled at me about that. One of those kids sitting in one place with the leg going up and down. Oh, I see a couple of them here. Non-stop. Now, let me start off by telling you, I'm no academician, and I can't hold a candle for these fellows here today in the subject area of historical revisionism. However, I'm going to take a somewhat different tack. When it comes to that, I'm going to try to tell you what it's good for today. And I've noticed that's something that historical revisionists don't particularly do. They tend to be academics, historians. And it's great. Man, these have been two great talks here today, haven't they? Yeah. I learned stuff that I had never known before. But what do I do with this now? I mean, what's the point of all this, after all? We're also going to talk about free speech a little bit. I'm going to give you my take on what's currently going on in the world, and I'll give you the real take on what is going on in the world, what the current status of free speech laws in America are, what they are in other countries, and where we're headed in America. Now, we're also going to talk about a brand new ideology that I'm announcing today called equalitarianism. You'll hear about that. And then finally, for the very first time anywhere, we are going to disclose to you the purpose of life. So hang on. You know, all this JDL hoo-ha that took place this week, some of you have heard about it, really proves that free speech is at the core of historical revisionism. Free speech is really what it's all about. Now, revisionism seeks to set the record straight. And I've heard it referred to as talking about the Holocaust only. But it isn't just about the Holocaust, because there's lots of things in history that we've been lied to about. Typically, propaganda, like the Holocaust myths, come out of wartime eras, like World War II produced the Holocaust myth. The Kuwaiti babies that Saddam Hussein's soldiers supposedly were throwing on the floor, which prompted Bush the First to go into Iraq, remember that? Came out it wasn't true. That's historical revisionism. About the weapons of mass destruction. Well, now we found out there weren't any. Historical revisionism at work. World War I. Did you know that there was a 6 million myth about World War I? A lot of people don't know that. Of course, the Jews don't want you to hear about that because it kind of calls into question about the 6 million that died in World War II. Coincidence? You be the judge. Lampshades, soap, both those things have been mentioned up here today. Without free speech, there would be no revisionism. There would be no dissent. America's First Amendment, I'm here to tell you right now, is the only one that is left. It's the only one that has any viability, because other than it, the Constitution is a dead letter. And the First Amendment, I like to tell people, is lying prone on the floor currently, breathing shallowly. Because what we're doing here today is the absolute limit of what free speech in America allows. And look what we had to go through to get together. Look what chased from one place to another, and we're meeting in secret to talk about the truth in America. In our America. How in the hell did that happen? You know, free speech is a funny thing. Used to be, it was just illegal to yell fire in a crowded theater. Unless it was actually on fire, of course. Truth, as somebody mentioned here earlier this morning, I think it was Paul. Great speech, Paul, by the way. Truth always used to be an absolute defense in a lawsuit. And yet today we see evolving the fact that truth doesn't matter. At first, they were libel and slander laws. You'd say something wrong about somebody. And if you called a woman a whore, you better be able to prove that she took money for sex. And if you could do that, you went free. And that's in the area of defamation. It's called tort law. He done him wrong. That's what a tort is. Then they developed the area of defamation a little bit more. They developed other torts called invasion of privacy, disclosure of private facts, and a couple of other things that have odd names, but these are actual legal doctrines. Those are the actual doctrine names I've just given you, by the way. And in those, what's involved is what you've said is true, but it's now illegal to say it. And that was the beginning of truth as a crime. It was the beginning of truth hurting. Then they talked about obscenity laws. We're talking about the U.S. Supreme Court, where truth hurts people. And then there's that judge who said, I can't remember the guy's name. He said, I can't define obscenity, but I know it when I see it. How many people have heard that? Yeah. Well, of course, now that he's dead, you've got to ask yourself, how are we going to apply that standard? Commercial speech. Court says that's not really speech. That's how they limit it. Flag burning wasn't speech, but now it is. Today, cross burning isn't speech. As a result of Virginia versus Black, a decision issued just a few months ago. And in there, Justice Marshall, of course, the one signing the majority opinion, carried on at length about how it was intent that they were punishing. And we can't allow this sort of intimidation to take place. Well, I got to ask you a question. If I were to take one of these chairs, which look like you could set fire to them, and set them out here and set it on fire with the vilest of intent towards Jews and blacks, would I go to jail? Interesting question, isn't it? What if I burn a cross but I don't have any evil intent in my heart? Do I still go to jail? The answer actually is yes. And it's a fairly enlightened view. I mean, it's not an enlightened view that makes you do that, but it's an enlightened view that recognizes that reality. Because we're starting to shift now from intent to effect, where it doesn't matter anymore what your intent is, even when things are true. You know, if you shoot somebody and they die, and you intended to do it, that's murder. If you shoot somebody by accident, at worst, that's manslaughter. Oftentimes, it's an accident. Intent. For so long, intent was important in the law. Today, it's becoming unimportant, especially in the venue of ideas. Now we have hate crimes. Hate crime laws, which have been fashioned by the ADL and handed over to states, have been passed in about 40 states now. The feds finally passed that federal hate crime law. These laws always require a physical act. They say, well, we're punishing a crime. We're not just punishing thought. We don't punish thought in America yet. Yeah, right. Let me tell you about a story I have in my own backyard. Bonners Ferry, Idaho, fellow standing in a supermarket checkout line, Mexican in front of him. They start exchanging words. One thing leads to another. Dirty Mexican spits on the floor. Cashier sees this. A week later, the guy, not the Mexican, the white guy, is visited by the police and he's arrested. And he's put on trial and he's facing 5 years in prison under the Idaho hate crime law. Well, what was the physical harm? He didn't punch the guy, didn't even touch the guy. Well, they said that the physical harm was that when he spit on the floor, just a little bit of the spittle got on the guy's, on the Mexican's tennis shoe. And that's how they were able to bring him to trial. And that's the way it's done. They take a law and they apply it the wrong way. And then after you get used to being prosecuted, then they change the law to directly prosecute what they've been doing all along. Pay attention, nothing up our sleeve. This is the way it's done. This is the way it's being done in America right now. The lines being blurred. You know, leftists say that there's no difference between a hate crime enhancement and a direct speech law. And they say that because they want to pass the laws now that just outlaw speech they don't like. Well, you heard it here first. I agree. They're right. There is no difference. But I got a different conclusion. Because they're right, that's why all those damned hate crime laws ought to be rescinded. Because we're punishing thought. That's what we're doing. And the punishment only goes one direction, in case you hadn't noticed. I had a case that I went through trial with a fella in southern Idaho with. I call it the say the N-word, go to jail case. Some of you are familiar with it. A fellow by the name of Lonnie Ray saw his wife being brutalized by a black guy, came up, saw the injury on her neck, and then shouted after the guy who had departed into a building, shouted through the open door. He says, tell that nigger to get out of here because I'm going to kick his butt. Said it once. They demanded the sheriff arrest him, prosecute him for assault, battery. Took his wife to the hospital, documented the injury. That guy never was charged, but Lonnie Ray was. And he went to trial, and he faced the possibility, because he was charged under a felony. They originally charged him under a misdemeanor in Idaho, but that wasn't enough for the prosecutors. You know, 6 months, 9 months in jail, that wasn't a big enough crime for what Lonnie Ray did. So they dismissed that charge, and they refiled it as a felony. Can you believe it? So that he would face 5 years in prison. For what? For standing up for the honor of his wife. We went to trial. Over my objection, the judge added some lesser included offenses at the end, including assault. Thankfully, the jury, and I say thankfully because it wasn't the first time I've been in front of a jury with a politically incorrect client, and when you've got a client like that, as I'm afraid Matt Hale is about to find out, you can go away for nothing. You can lose everything for nothing. The normal rules are off. They convicted Lonnie Ray of assault. Didn't even touch the guy. We took it up on appeal. We got the decision a couple of months ago, as some of you know. We got it reversed, so Lonnie Ray goes free. Thank you. That's a rare reversal, though. And really, it was on a technicality. The appellate court said assault isn't a lesser-included offense of the hate crime law. If the judge had let the jury bring in a decision as to whether or not Lonnie was guilty of disturbing the peace, we'd have been in trouble because they said that was a subset. And so we won that case on what I call a technicality. I'll take it. A win's a win. But boy, it tells you which way the wind is blowing in this country now. Today we focus on intent, and tomorrow it will be just be on effect, just like we've heard that it is in Canada today. About a couple of months ago, I wrote an article called "It Wasn't Arabs." You've seen it. A lot of people have seen it, it turns out. I had just been named by Morris D's Southern Poverty Law Center to his list of 40 people to watch, i.e., well, thank you. I was kind of proud of that. But at the moment, I was pissed. And so, I sat down and I wrote "It Wasn't Arabs." And I wrote it of a piece in about an hour. Bang, bang. There was nothing that I referred to. There are 88 points that I went through there off the top of my head. You know, if I'd really put my mind to it and done some research, I can't imagine what I might have come up with. It's gone around the world several times, been translated into several different languages. And in Canada, there was a fellow named Nusrat Hussein, a fellow who had a 4,000-person circulation newspaper in Vancouver, a Muslim, and he reprinted it. A lot of people have reprinted it. Not mainstream, of course. Nobody mainstream ever reprints anything of mine. And the Canadian Jewish Congress tried to get Nusrat Hussein charged under Canada law and send him to prison for reprinting my article. Imagine what they'd like to do if they could get their hands on me. Why? Because it hurts some Jewish feelings. Ask Ernst Zundel. Isn't that really why he's sitting in cell number 7? There's a recent Hungary law that was passed by both houses of their Congress, and at the last moment, the president declined to sign it. It'll be back, and he'll sign it. But this law specifically said that if you publicly publicly insult a Jew, this law was written specifically for Jews. If you publicly insult a Jew, you go to prison for 2 years. And if you mean it, you go to prison for 5 years. In other words, if you intended to insult a Jew, it's 5 years. If the only effect was it was an accident, maybe you said something accidental that sounded like, maybe you said, achoo, and somebody was offended. Then you could go to jail for 2 years. Notice the shift of the focus from intent to effect. It's happening. It's happened internationally. This is true in Germany, Britain, Italy. It's true in all Western countries except America. Remember the First Amendment? Breathing shallowly. That's the breathing part. Remember Russia last century? After the Bolsheviks, after the Jews took over? Some people say 20 million white Christians were then murdered for anti-Semitism when they passed that law and made it the death penalty for being anti-Semitic. Alexander Solzhenitsyn said it was 40 million. Some people say 67 million. Some say 80 million. But nobody seems to dispute the minimum number of 20 million. And every Christian church in Russia was burned to the ground. Who knows how many synagogues were burned down? That's right, not one. Today, say the N-word, go to jail. Tomorrow, say the J-word, go to jail. Day after tomorrow, say the J-word, die. Think it can't happen here? You haven't been paying attention. And what we're seeing happening in the area of speech is just the tip of the iceberg. We've seen laws bootstrapped and misapplied to so many. Get hit with a restraining order in domestic relations? You can't own a gun anymore. And now it's being extended to disturbing the peace. Did you know that? It is. And this is how they're banning guns. It's coming. It's like Ernst Zundel, the fellow to whom this conference is dedicated. The real crime is in thinking like you and I do. Like we do. Thought crimes. Truth has nothing to do with it. Waco, Ruby Ridge, Richard Butler, another ex-client of mine, Christine Greenwood in Southern California, Matt Hale right this moment, sweating that jury verdict in Chicago, David Duke just got out, he's in a halfway house, Artie Wheeler, that's right, he's a good man, it's a bum rap. People want to say, well, he admitted that he embezzled that money. He did nothing of the sort. He acknowledged reality, and he took a deal rather than face a jury and go to prison for 20 years. Why do you think the deal for only a year or 18 months, I think it was, why do you think such a short period of time was offered by the prosecution? Because of the litigation risk, as they call it. You're right, no case. In all of these cases, it's no case. Artie Wheeler. Remember the guy that got picked up and thrown in jail because he had illegal gunpowder in his basement? Fella who's... It's going to come to me. Chester Doles, who pled out to... I wish he hadn't, but if I had a client, I'd have to tell him, you look, you're politically incorrect, and all hell's going to break loose. You stand in front of a jury, and it's true. Pled out to some time and went to jail for being a felon in possession of guns, even though he wasn't a felon and he had no guns. What was his crime? He was a member of the National Alliance, like some of the folks here, and they know all too well that they could be next. Is Alex Linder here? Stand up, Alex. Meet Alex Linder. Alex runs a website called Vanguard National News, VNN. I like it. A lot of people don't. A lot of people here don't like it. Alex was uninvited by Mueller, the originator or the original organizer of this conference. And this was done a few hours before the conference was canceled. Now, I have a theory about why it is we're meeting here instead of someplace else. I have a theory why it is that Walter Mueller isn't sitting here with us. And the theory involves that gentleman, that well-scrubbed young man in the business suit that you just saw. He got uninvited. And almost immediately, 60 people demanded their money back. I know the moment I heard about it, I sent an angry email saying, what in the hell is going on? And I'm sure I wasn't the only one. Another organizer, Frederick Tobin, who isn't here today, sent a very, I'd never seen you talk like that, sent an angry email about it. And why? Because people disagree with this young man's website and what is said on it. Pots and kettles. You would think if there was any place and any group of people that could tolerate the speech of another, it'd be us, wouldn't you? Now, I'm a big fan of Alex's site since it's so edgy and thought-provoking, and it is. You know, I love going there and reading the front page because they have all the links to the back articles. Usually, I don't even read the articles. What I read are the little squibs that are written about them, which Alex writes, because they're so funny and so on the money. And that's why I was kind of surprised to hear just how homophobic. I knew it was kind of racist, sexist, profane, even obscene that website is. I got to tell you, I don't want my kids going there. I don't think it's appropriate for children or the weak of heart. Alex, I wouldn't have said any of this if you hadn't been here to stand up. You remember the difference between an enemy and a friend? A friend will stab you in the front. Alex disagrees with me. He thinks his site is going to be mainstream one day. Maybe so. It's his right to disagree. I'm glad you're here with us. If we don't believe in freedom of speech for those of whom we disapprove or even hate, then we don't believe in freedom of speech at all. What we see elsewhere is coming to America, ladies and gentlemen, and it's coming fast. While we were out making a sandwich during the commercial break, a coup took place. Today we have a dictatorship with only illusion of democracy. We don't even have the pretense of a republic anymore. Judiciary makes laws directed by the administration. The executive rules absolutely. Legislators simply steal from the top of the heap for the new priesthood, the legal profession. Lawyers are the privileged class now, and they're robbing America blind. The new world order is here, and it's now. It's America. The UN isn't coming, ladies and gentlemen. Did you figure that out yet? They aren't taking us over. We're taking over the rest of the world. America writ large, but no Bill of Rights. Indeed, no personal rights at all. The system's broken, irretrievably broken, and it can't be fixed because it won't be fixed. We can't work within the system anymore to effect meaningful change because the system won't allow it. As a lawyer, I'm inside the system. Everyone says the system is broken. You don't know how bad things really are. If you think Kerry's going to be different, think again. There was no change from Bush the first to Clinton, and there was no change from Clinton to Bush the second. You think there's going to be a change to Kerry? You know the real problem with America's two-party system? Only one of the parties ever loses. I kind of picture America like the hired gun in some old black and white movie on TV. I can see it now. We sent the weapons to Iraq to fight Iran with. And then we sent the weapons to Afghanistan before that to fight Russia with. And yet the last two countries we mopped up were Iraq and Afghanistan. Funny thing. All right, so picture it. Small town in the west, tumbleweeds blowing in the background. And into town in the buckboard rides the dirt farmer and his son. You've seen this a million times. And they pull up in front of the general store, And the kid runs in to see what kind of candy's just come in. And the farmer gets out, ties up the wagon and the horse, and out from the shadow steps Jack Palance. I told you to get out of town. Oh, mister, I don't want any trouble. I just come to town, get supplies, and we'll be gone. And Jack takes out a gun and he throws it at the farmer's feet. Pick up the gun. Oh, Mr. Pound, if I do that, you'll shoot me. Pick it up. Oh, please, Mr. Palance, I don't want any trouble. I just want to get my supplies and leave town. I'm just an honest farmer. Pick it up. You all saw it. He had a gun. Yeah, it's not funny. And why isn't it funny? You tell me how that little scenario is any different from what we did to Afghanistan or Iraq. I wish that were the case, but we're Jack Palance. Israel is the cattle rancher sitting inside watching through the window. You know, we got to make a change in America. Thank you. You know, maybe we won't succeed in making this change or these changes that are required. You know, but people like you and me, we can deserve to succeed to make those changes. Revisionism isn't just an academic historical inquiry. It's important today because it shows that we've been lied to. It makes it easier to see how we're being lied to every day. As I said, I'm no expert in revisionism, but I know how to think logically. Consider, and here is my statement on revisionism. Other people are going to stand up here for an hour and talk to you, and it's great. So you want to hear me talk about the Holocaust? Here it is. Here's my take on it. Consider, in war, with fuel and resources scarce, the Germans loaded Jews into rail cars, transported them hundreds of miles to camps built specifically to house them, fed them, clothed them, tattooed them to keep track of them. Why? So they could kill them! Yeah, right. Come on! Even my kids can see through that. If they wanted to kill him, they would have done it the way the Russian Jews did in the first half of the century, with a bullet to the base of the skull wherever they were found. That's my statement on the Holocaust. I don't think it really requires anything more. The Germans were trying to get the Jews out of their country, that's all. Like so many people have thrown them out in times past. You know, I don't even believe the biblical account of Exodus, if you want to know the truth. Well, you know who wrote that. I think the Jews got thrown out of Egypt. Hell, they were in charge. Who was in charge of the counting house? Huh? Yeah. As my buddy Al puts it, in all of German-occupied Europe, there were 2.4 million Jews. After the war, 3.8 million Jews claimed survivor pensions from the German government. Tragically, the remaining 6 million were lost. You know, I saw a movie a couple, 3 weeks ago called Secondhand Lions. It came out on DVD. It was funny. It had Robert Duvall. I really liked the guy. And there was a kid in there that came from a ne'er-do-well white trash mother. Is there any other kind of white mother portrayed in the media today? And they're out there next to the pond, and the kid's bemoaning his lot in life and telling Robert Duvall, who's his kind of his adopted grandfather, actually an uncle, I believe, something that he liked to fantasize being part of a family, you see. And a great line. Duvall says to him, "You know, something doesn't have to be true for you to believe in it." And he was right. Something doesn't have to be true for you to believe in it. And boy, the people here today are proving that to you in spades, aren't they? You know, revisionism serves a real purpose today, other than just an excuse for us to get together and have a party. It shows we're being lied to, and that we're being lied to by the same crowd, the Jews. Now, forgive me if I continually use the word Jew. I've gotten away from using the phrase the chosen. Because I don't want to be pulling a punch anymore. Because when I pull my punch on this issue, I play right. I legitimize what they do. When I pull my punch, I tell you that I'm ashamed of what I'm saying. And I'm not. Now, because the Holocaust is so easy to disprove due to the patent lies and the evidence manufacturing by the Jews, it gives us something to use in awakening others. That's why historical revisionism is so important today in a nutshell. It gives us something to use to wake other people up. It's a gift. It shows us their stripes. Revisionism makes them crazy. Look what the JDL was doing earlier this week. I'm surprised they're not here outside going crazy. Actually, it's a public place. They could be in the back going crazy. How many people in here get the semi-regular newsletter that I send out? Could I ask for a show of hands? That's quite a few, actually. Thank you. Then if you were home, you got the last two I put out this week, and you kind of got filled in on what the JDL was doing. And you got a copy of the written threat that Bill Maniacal, I don't know how it's pronounced, I call him Bill Maniacal, who's the new head of the JDL, the threat that he sent me. Hey. And you saw my response to it. And it was a veiled threat. All by itself, you wouldn't understand it, unless you read my response first, and then you would see it was a serious threat. They're so stupid! I mean, they leave threats on my answering machine that I put on the web for you to listen to! They send them to me by email so that I can make fun of them! This is their big weakness. They're so stupid about things like this. They always overreach. Their arrogance is always their undoing. They will always hand us a gift. The passion of the Christ.
Excuse me, sir. Men will be undoing, sir.
When will the undoing surface?
When will it reach the point of saturation that the world will respond?
You know, I'm not sure. But since they're going worldwide with it, in the past they were always thrown out of countries and moved on to another country. I'll tell you, this time they better have a new planet picked out. That was fun. Thanks. You'd think I planted her for that. I didn't. You know, I got an email from my brother. Even he was outraged by the JDL threat that I got. My brother is a Southern Baptist. He thinks that all the Arabs should be killed. He is exactly what you just heard about. He and I go back and forth all the time. Sometimes I say, I got an email from a list member talking about the Arabs, and what it is that's my brother just sent me something that annoyed me. I don't know. Maybe I was adopted. And, you know, I think I've heard this before about how our politicians are picked by God and put in place because they're our friends or something or other. You know, and George Bush was picked. I remember George Bush saying, remember this, a couple months ago? God picked him for this time and this place. You know, after all that happened in Florida and with the Supreme Court, I'm glad it's been cleared up because I wondered how the hell he got that job. Ideas. They're more dangerous than guns. And they don't want us to have guns. So why should we be surprised to learn that they don't want us to have ideas either? They will never break our spirit. And they'll never silence us, and they'll never take our freedom. There was a lot of talk this week about this conference being hijacked by white supremacists. I haven't seen a one. And obviously that's not true. It's just sour grapes from a loser that dropped the ball and didn't care about you folks. You know, I've been so impressed by the job that Harvey Taylor has continued to do. He really has been the backbone of what has culminated in today. A hand for Harvey. And I'm not going to leave Mark Weber out either, because if Mark Weber hadn't stepped in and picked up the ball, this wouldn't be happening. Oops. I don't know where that goes, but we'll find out. I'll tell him I erased the tape. You know, it's amazing how many revisionists, even David Irving. Those on my list know that I wrote an article about David Irving after I went to hear him speak, and I heard him try to distance himself from the very people that were there. You know, and I looked around and I thought, you know, if I wasn't here, it would just be David and two feds. I can't understand it. You know, those of us concerned about illegal immigration and the loss of white identity and white culture in America are the only ones who really will have historical revisionists. And yet so many of them deny us. Look at the speakers scheduled for today that bailed out. You and me, you know, we're the forgotten ones. We're not white supremacists. Remember I told you about the new ideology I was going to announce today? We are equalitarians. We are seeking equality of the races. That's all we want. I'm against black supremacy, and that's what affirmative action is. I'm against Jewish supremacy, and that's what the JDL is all about. The people that aren't here that should have been here, be they organizers, sponsors, or speakers, it's about them. To them, it's not about you. To me, it's about you. When I told my list that I was going to be speaking, I knew I was coming. When the conference was canceled, I knew I was coming. Because if there was one person that didn't get the word who showed up expecting to hear me talk, by golly, they were going to hear me talk. I'll crawl through broken glass to keep a commitment if I have to. There was never any question that I was going to be here with you today. You know, you've been real patient today. You've been kind. A really world-class audience, actually. Let me shift a little bit. Originally, it was suggested that I might have two things to say today, and then we got a lot of people to talk. So I put both things together, and I cut short the talk I was going to give at this time. It was going to be what I call my fire and brimstone talk. start to finish. Oh, I can get much worse than this. But I also have a hope and inspiration talk. And that's kind of what I'd like to segue into now. I talk a lot about objectives, as some people know. Those who have followed the serialization of chapter 15 of the book that I'm just finishing up called Treading Water, you know that I think big in terms of objectives, in the business sense, manage by objective. Keep your objective firmly in sight, and that's the easiest way to get there. And commitment means a lot in attaining objectives. Now, let's try a little exercise here. I want to find out how many of you are really committed to making a difference for white America, for your children. How many are, how many are 50% committed to that?
All
75%. 85%. We're starting to get up there now. How many of you are at least 95% committed? Is there anybody here that's actually 100% committed to that concept? That's a lot. All right. All of you that aren't 100% committed, congratulations. I really commend you. I don't have to commend the 100%ers because they know that there's nothing easier than being 100% committed to something. The toughest thing in the world is to be 95% committed because you're always reaching for it and then pulling back. Does this remind anybody of any relationships they've had in life? Remember how much trouble they were, how much effort they were? And then did you also have a relationship that you just rushed into with arms open wide and not a doubt in your mind? What a difference, huh? That's the difference between being 95% committed and 100% committed. Come on in, the water's fine. Get 100% committed because we need you. We need you to make a difference in America today. Let's have some fun here. Everybody stand up, please. Let me demonstrate something about trying. Turn around and face your chair. All right. Now try to pick up your chair. Oh, no. Put them down. Put them down. Put them all down. Let's try it again. All right. Now listen carefully. Try to pick up your chair. Put them down, put them down. All right, we're going to try it one more time. I'll say it again. Try to pick up your chair. This is great. Look, I can see the smoke coming out of his ears. Thanks. You've been a good... Sit down. You've been a good sport. Here's what that was about. And let me tell it to you as a parable. Did you see the Star Wars movie? I think it was called The Revenge of the Jedi. Luke flew the little space thing, plane, whatever, off to the planet to meet the Jedi Master for the final part of his training. And he crashed it into the swamp. Then he meets Yoda. And during his training, later in the film, we see them out there alongside the swamp, and Luke is on his hand, feet up in the air, and Yoda's on top, standing on top of him, little green guy. How many remember this scene? God, is it getting that old now? Am I dating myself with a Star Wars reference? And Luke is shaking and sweat is breaking out on his brow and the space thing just lifts about a foot out of the muck and the mire, and then suddenly it falls back. Luke falls to the ground, and Yoda goes tumbling and berates Luke for failing. And Luke said, but I tried so hard. And who remembers what Yoda said? This is a classic line. He said, "That is why you fail. There is no trying." Try to pick up the chair. There is no trying. You pick it up or you don't. And that's another illustration of the difference between 95% commitment and 100% commitment, and why it's the easiest thing in the world to be 100% committed to something. Come on in. The water's fine. You know, there's a connection between people that we don't see. Science hasn't figured it out yet. And you know what it is. You know, I mean, you meet somebody, and within 20 seconds, you know whether you like them or not, don't you? How do we do that? There's something that connects us. How many people have read Lord of the Flies? A classic book about the herd mentality, about a group of boys thrown up on a desert island who revert to savagery when acting as a group. There's a book I saw back on the table by Francis Jacqui entitled Imperium. Has anybody read that? Big, thick book. It was real easy to read, wasn't it? That's it. Hold it up so everybody can see it. That's it. This is a classic. He wrote it in a very short period of time. I forget what it was, and he was very young at the time, early 30s. And he was a genius, certifiable. And that book is hard to read. It's turgid. It's dense. But it's brilliant. And one of the many things that he has to say is that there's a common spirit that unites races. And it's a sub-spirit of humanity in general. And I believe that there are sub-spirits going all the way down until you're by yourself. Anytime you got a group of two people, you got something going on. When you got a group like this, there's something going on amongst us. Let me tell you about something that happened just 2 weeks ago. My family and I live in North Idaho. And we took a car drive to Seattle to visit our oldest daughter, who's there going to school. And we stopped in the little town that I grew up in, Brewster, Washington. And as I always do when I stop in, we went up to visit my mother's grave. And we stood there, it's up in the air, looks over a valley with the Columbia River roaring through it, a tree there, it's a beautiful scene. They bought these grave plots back before there was ever grass there, it was just dirt. And my grandmother's there, and my brother's there, and my uncle's there. And I can remember going there with my mother and having her stand there and tell me how much she loved the view. And I told my children about that. And something came over us and we just hugged. And you can see it in me now because I'm kind of choked up. And I'm not ashamed of that. It's an honest emotion. You know, threaten to punch me in the nose if I start crying, I'll be ashamed of that. But a man should never be ashamed of an honest emotion. There was a reason I told you that story. It's going to become apparent in a moment. And it's about how we need to increase awareness in other people. And it's about doing it without trying so hard. It's about doing it like it's second nature, because it really is easy. Rather than pound them, here's how you do it. You just ask them a question and nudge them along and let them pull you in. Juries taught me this. I learned by appearing in front of juries that they don't want to be told how to think. They want you to bring them along a certain way, and then when they catch wind of where they're supposed to go, you shut up and sit back. And they'll go there in a rush, proud of the fact that they got there on their own. We're all like that. You're like that. I'm like that. You know it. So when you're trying to convince other people, whether it be something about the Holocaust, or whether it be anything about the plight of white America today. And I don't mean to pound on white America today, but really, it's white American males especially that are in the box now. I mean, we really don't have any rights whatsoever. You know, back in the 60s, I probably would have been marching for the blacks because they truly were oppressed. But the wheel turned round. We didn't know we were just trading places with them. All right. We talked about the passion and how powerful it was, and the question was asked. Are they talking about it? What effect is it having? And I agree that it's having a powerful effect, but I got a different take on why. It's having a powerful effect because Foxworth and the ADL and all the Jews of the world ganged up on it. It's just like my brother sending me that email saying how outraged he was at the JDL for threatening me. So, you say to somebody, hey, have you seen The Passion yet? Well, yeah. What do you think of all that outroar about people saying that it ought to be outlawed? And then just sit back. They can see the objective and they want to go there, and they will. You can do that about health care. Well, boy, I can't afford health insurance anymore. How do you feel about all the illegal... You know, I hear there's a hospital that just closed down in California because they couldn't support all the illegal immigrants that were showing up that they're required by law to service. Then shut up and let them... I mean, you've shown them where the barn is. They'll get there. It's easy. It really is easy. You know, they say we're all immigrants. Revisionism says otherwise. We're not all immigrants. I was born and raised here. I'm an American. I grew up in the 50s. There were half as many Americans as there are today, and virtually all the increase today is from immigration, and unfortunately, way too much of it is illegal immigration. People know this. They don't like it. We're being whipsawed at the top by our jobs being outsourced and factories going overseas, and we're having our legs cut out from under us by the illegal immigrants taking the jobs at the bottom. The unemployment rate, as best I can tell, in America today is probably around 11 or 12%, easily twice what the government admits. Of course, they say there's no inflation, too. Convincing people doesn't have to be difficult. Find a need and fill it. Now, let me give you a very personal example. My son is 16 right now. And they've announced that they're going to bring the draft back. And this time there will be no college deferments. And I've got a 13-year-old daughter, and they're going to draft girls too. And when they start the draft, there will be plenty of guys and girls with college degrees for them to fill out the officer corps. That means my son is going to be carrying a rifle. I don't like that. I got a real problem with that. I got a real problem with what's going on in Iraq. You've heard about what's been going on in the last week or two. They've been carpet bombing Fallujah. They sent a missile into that mosque when it was full of people praying. The Israelis dropped a missile on that cleric in a wheelchair. I've seen pictures of the ambulance windshields showing the bullet holes high up. And they're high up, you know why? And it's only one or two bullet holes in each case. It's because of snipers on rooftops targeting the drivers, and they only needed one shot. And we're doing that. And our boys and girls are dying in record numbers. Did you hear about the lady who got fired yesterday for releasing those photographs she took of the coffins in the plane? And Bush the Second doesn't want you to know. It's like somehow or other, if you don't see it, it's not real. It doesn't have to be real for you to believe in it, after all. What am I going to do? I mean, really, what am I going to do? I got a year to figure this out. And this is one of the hardest things I've ever... You can see the sweat popping out of my brow with the effort of this one. What am I going to do about my son? Because I'll be damned if I'm going to let him die in some Arab hellhole. obviously. Maybe we could move. Not Canada this time, clearly. They've already announced that they aren't going to allow that this time around. Oddly enough, Russia appears to be the new source for freedom and liberty. Can you believe it? How ironic. They're throwing Jews out of Russia now, you know. And the story that's being told in the media is that they're on the verge of reverting to Stalinism. Well, of course, we all know who owns the American media. I suggested that to my wife. It took me an hour to get her off the ceiling. And then 2 weeks ago, I'm sitting in my study, she's sitting over there, and it just something just popped into my head, and I tried it with her. And in 5 minutes, I convinced her. And it was so easy. Do you want to know how I did it? You want to see how I did it? All right. You got to all stand up again. All right, do this. Clench your right fist. Put it down to your side. Put your other hand down to the side. Now close your eyes. Trust me, I'm not going to come out and touch you or anything. You're standing at a gravesite. And you can feel the moist, cool earth in your hand that you just taken from the mound at the foot of the grave. And picture, if you will, as you step up to the edge of that grave and you toss that earth and you see and you hear pebbles and dirt skittering across the polished mahogany surface of your child's casket. And then you step back. Keep your eyes closed. You step back and you watch as they lower it into the ground. You can hear the straps as they're retracted. Sun's shining, birds are singing, beautiful day, but you don't notice that part. And picture yourself coming back the next day, and the grave's been filled in now, and it's mounded up. You know how it has to be because it settles with the rain? And you sink down. And you talk to your child. And then a week later, you can see the first green shoots of the grass coming up through the dirt. And you come again and again. And summer turns to fall and the leaves are blowing across the grave and the grass is all grown in. And it's green and lush. And you always tend the headstone because they don't do a real good job of that. And then it's winter. And there's snow in patches. And you're there talking to your child. And before you know it, it's the following summer. And the following year. And the following year. And for the rest of your life, you're coming back again and again. And every time you do, you ask yourself the question that you asked yourself when you first stood next to that grave before it was closed. Why did I let this happen? I knew what the danger was of letting my child be drafted and be sent to Iraq. I knew there was a chance that he or she would die and come back and we would have to bury him or her. Why did I do it? Why didn't I do something to prevent it? I mean, even if it took picking up my family and moving out of the country, I would rather I had done that than to live with this every hour of every day of the rest of my life. Nobody should have to bury a child. Okay, open your eyes, please. Welcome back. There's a reason I said that, because that wasn't a dream. That really happened. I'm an agent from the future, and we have been so impressed by the recriminations that each of you have brought against yourselves through the years since your child died. And understand how many times you've wished that you could turn back the clock and do something that we've decided to grant your wish. Now we're clouding your mind, and you're going to leave here and you're going to wonder, that was just a thing that guy did. Well, yeah, there's a reason we do that. We're clouding your mind. This is one of two things I've been authorized to tell you about. It really happened. You've been brought back in time and assembled in this one place. And that's the one thing that you've all got in common, even those of you who don't have children yet, because you're going to have a child and you're going to stand over that gravesite. It really happened. And you've got a second chance. Now. Here and now. What are you going to do with it? What are you going to do with it? Because I've opened your eyes, haven't I? You're going to have as much trouble with this as I'm having. Misery loves company, and welcome on board. You're going to have to deal with this issue. Because the alternative is so horrible. What are you going to do? Are you going to move? Right now, I'm pleased to report to you that your child is home, waiting for you to return, waiting to hug you, waiting to tell you that she or he loves you, waiting to fill up your hearing with the melody of their laughter, those beautiful little girls. You've got a second chance. What are you going to do with it? Are you willing to do whatever it takes to remove your child from danger? Are you willing to be 100% committed to that concept? Because if you are, you're not going to have the trouble that I'm having with it. The biggest problem I had was convincing my wife. I took her through that exercise, and 5 minutes later, she said, "When do we leave?" It doesn't have to be tough, folks. It can be easy to awaken people about so many things. Don't make it tough on yourselves. You know, my wife, in fact, she told our kids we were moving to Russia. I said, "Hold on, I'm not quite there yet." Are you willing to make a difference? You know, you're part of something much bigger than yourself now. You're here, and that's proof to me that you are. You're a part of people that want to make a difference in America today, that are concerned about their country and the way things are going. What are you willing to do? Are you going to risk relationships? Are you going to talk to brothers the way I talk to mine? That lunatic Southern Baptist. Are you going to talk to folks at work? Watch it there, because they don't deserve to have you pushing it on them at work. They have to be there. Are you going to talk to your children? Are you going to let them know how you feel about things? Because you've got children, and I know you've been holding back from them. You know, Gandhi said, first they ignore you, and then they laugh at you, and then they fight you, and then you win. We're at the fighting stage now. We're at war, and what's at stake is our very existence. If there must be trouble, I hope and I pray that it comes right now so that my children can live in a time of peace. My son asked me, "Well, geez, what's the difference if America got invaded and if I get sent off to Iraq?" Well, the difference, my son, is that if America gets invaded, I will hand you the rifle and you and I will both go out to meet them together. But you don't have to go to Iraq. Let us fight the fight, not our children. In fact, I wish we could send George Bush over there to fight it. Or Bill Clinton, he said he wanted to jump in the foxhole with the rifle and defend the Israelis. You know, to win a war, you got to risk death, and that might seem scary, but to have nothing worth dying for, that isn't worth living. You have to consciously choose not to be afraid. And remember, you know, there's a limit to the pain and suffering that you can feel, but there's no limit to fear. Take it from me, a relative, oldster. In 20 years, you will regret much more what you didn't do now than what you did do. William Wallace, played by Mel Gibson in the movie Braveheart, said it really well when he was rallying his troops to go fight the British. "I fight and you may die, run and you will live at least a while, and dying in your beds many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the days from this to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom?" And with that, and outnumbered, they went to battle and won. All right. I told you I was an agent from the future, and I had two things. The time has come for me to impart to you the second thing, the purpose of life. It isn't to be happy. That's a common misconception. The purpose of life is to make a difference. To make a difference in other people's lives and your life. And the best proof of that is that when you're gone, you're missed. Live your life in a way that the chapel will be mobbed at your funeral and that there won't be a dry eye in the place. The purpose of life is to live any way you want to, but make a difference. You know, I'm proud of you, for one. I'm glad you're here. I'm proud of the organizers and the sponsors and the other speakers. Because we stand up like this, we are willing. The mere fact that we're here shows that we're willing to make a difference. I'm proud to call you friends. Together we can make a difference. Together we can touch lives. Together, we can awaken America. I really believe that. I said it before, I'll say it again. You know, we can't guarantee that we're going to be successful. But here's something we can guarantee. We can guarantee that we deserve to be successful. My name's Edgar Steele, and it has been a real privilege and an honor to spend time with you. Thank you.